Hello and welcome, everybody. Once again, this is the Spitballin' Podcast, a Texas Rangers podcast. I'm Ben Rogers, joined by Jamie Newberg. And Jamie, plenty to talk about in Rangerland. Rangers doing really well, continue to stack up wins, despite the fact that their bullpen hasn't been very good and a couple of their big left-handed bats haven't really gotten going yet. So at this point in the season, what would you say is the identity of this club, or what have we learned about this club to this point?
Maybe the identity is that it's just a well put together ball club that you know competes even when it's not at its best. This team clearly hasn't hit on all cylinders or really close to all cylinders yet. And I think in the last few days, I think they reached 10 games over 500, and I saw it somewhere. I guess several of the beat reporters pointed out that they had not been 10 games over 500 last year, a playoff season, until mid-September. You pace this out, and you're 10 games over a third into the season. You're going to finish 30 games over? Doubtful. But the flip side of that is they haven't really got on that, 12 out of 14 streak where they're hitting and pitching at the same time. So, the fact that despite the inconsistencies in the lineup and the bullpen and even time to time in the rotation, team's playing well. And I think that maybe that's the identity, is that they're able to compete even when they're not at their best.
Man, there's been a lot of chatter about the bullpen and bullpen management and Banny's under fire. And, to your point, the other day I was looking at things, and yeah, they were 10 games over 500, and the loudest complaints or the loudest chatter was just really complaining about the bullpen. I'm like, 10 games over, though. And I started thinking about it, and really the loss of Kella, I think, hurt significantly, more than maybe I realized at the time. Tolleson not being the guy he was last year, obviously that's hurt. Wilhelmsen not being the guy they thought he would be, that hurts. All things considered, the Rangers have blown 7 saves. If they had won those games, or even 6 out of those 7, they would have the best record in all of baseball. And so I'm just like, okay. So I think what happened is, I think Banny had to get rattled by that a little bit. You'd have to be human to have 7 games that you felt like you had and you should be able to lock down and have those blown. I think any time he's close to getting a win, he's going to use Dyson and Diekman and now Matt Bush to secure the win, to do everything he can to secure that win, because they're so important and they're sacred and they've blown a lot of them. He's getting criticized for using those 3 guys over and over and over, especially Bush since he just got here. But really, he doesn't have a lot of other options if he wants to secure those wins.
Well, especially with the 3 guys down that you're talking about. One injured and 2 ineffective. And really, every single manager in baseball, every single season that manages a winning team gets criticized for bullpen usage. That's just that's the nature of the job. And I'm not trying to excuse it, but we would be having this conversation no matter what year it was, as long as the team was winning. And, to me, there's a couple maybe issues under the surface that have led to some of the bullpen issues, one of which is that we talked about this one of the very first episodes of this podcast we did. The starters are not going extremely deep into games ever. They're always getting in that 6 innings, and time to time they're getting in 7, but we never see 8. We rarely see them get into the 8th. Complete games, we had, 1 or 2? Without giving the bullpen a break on the days that you win, this is what happens. The second thing is, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but there just haven't been a whole lot of blowout wins. There's been a lot of wins, but most of them, the game's been on the line or at least nervously close to on the line in the 9th, where the manager and the pitching coach feel like they need to have their best arms out there, not to make sure the game doesn't get out of hand. There haven't been a whole lot of 8-2 scores going into the 9th where you could just put in Ramos or Jackson or someone like that to shut things down and give everybody a break. And it's a winning team. If this team were 10 games under 500, you wouldn't be using your closer and your 2 eighth inning guys as often as they are. I mean, it's a problem, but obviously it's a good problem in a way, because you'd rather this team be winning and having to rely on those arms than not. And, to me, the return of Darvish, while it may not immediately help, soon enough it will help, in terms of every 5th day you can hope that you got a guy that's going to get you into the 8th inning. Hamels right now is not at his best. Still gave the team seven innings last time out. Once he gets back into form, hopefully, and is locating and not going six pitches deep on a lot of hitters, he gets into the eighth inning. You start to give your bullpen a break. Kella comes back eventually. Maybe Tanner Shepherds comes back. Tolleson hopefully finds his rhythm. Maybe Wilhelmson works his way back. Barnett has proven that he's a winning piece. And if he's not your fourth guy, but instead is your sixth guy, then we're talking. But you know, right now, sort of, this is a microcosm of the bigger problem that we talked about a minute ago, is that everything's not clicking on all cylinders right now. They're surviving, but it's sort of running things thin in the bullpen.
You know, and the other thing I was thinking about with regard to that is, last year, you know, when the Rangers went out and got Dyson and Diekman, they weren't on my radar. Neither guy was, and they were incredible acquisitions. Matt Bush, I don't think was on anybody's radar. He was, if so, you would have been at the Golden Corral parking lot when he was getting his workouts in.
Tony Barnett in Japan, same thing.
Yeah, and so they find these guys and continue to find these guys. And while sometimes, as you know, Rangers fans will look at this and say, okay, well, you're burning up Bush, you're burning up Dyson and Diekman right now. And you're going to have to need those guys in the second half, and you're going to need those guys in the postseason. Well, who knows what this bullpen is going to look like at that point? Once the front office goes out and acquires some guys and looks under every rock and, you know, wheels and deals, who knows? I mean, they could go get other pieces like Dyson, like Diekman, like Bush, like Barnett. And so it does emphasize that, you know, get these wins now while you can. Even if you've got to tax your bullpen a little bit to get these wins. Because if you're not getting these wins, then what are we even talking about? By the end of the year, you're not going to have enough of them to be in the postseason.
Yeah, and true enough, but I guarantee you they're trying to not ride these guys so hard. There's nights where, you know, they feel like they need to, rather than going to what amounts to their seventh or eighth relievers, who may be in a role as a fourth or fifth reliever right now. You know, they're not trying to run these guys into the ground, and it's been an issue. Sure would like to see some of these pitchers. Martin Perez strikes me as a guy that when you see good Martin Perez, and we're starting to see more of that, he's throwing strikes early in the count, and he's not going to 3-2 and 2-2 every single time. Maybe he's a guy that starts getting into the eighth inning. If he's pounding the zone, getting balls hit on the ground, you know, base runners turn into double plays from time to time, that shortens innings. Maybe he's a third guy that you can count on to get deep. Derek Holland, you know, you erase his one really bad outing and another bad outing or two. He's had a really good year. The numbers overall don't look great because of the really bad effort he had against Toronto. You know, if he gets into rhythm and gets deeper, then we're talking. And you mentioned that, you know, JD is likely to go get some relief help in July. I'm not so sure he's not looking for rotation help. I mean, you look at this rotation. We haven't even mentioned Colby. He's a lock for six or seven innings every single time. The rotation has been really solid, among the very best in the American League. That is not going to stop John Daniels for looking at someone to put at the top, you know, to fit in with Darvish and Hamels as far as, you know, lockdown playoff starting pitchers that you hand the ball to and think, we got a real chance to win tonight.
Right, and I agree with you. I think he's always looking for young, controllable, top-of-the-rotation guys. And if they're going to part with any of their top prospects, it's going to be for that and that alone, I would guess. Or that would be the most likely thing they would acquire. And the reality is, Yu Darvish isn't going to be here very much longer, in my opinion. He's got this year and one more year. And honestly, I think the Rangers will be at a crossroads this offseason. I don't know that it's likely that they trade Yu Darvish going into his last year, making $11 million as they try to win a true ace in a contract year. But if he leaves, which I believe he will leave, then you get the compensatory pick and that's it. But you get to use him while you chase the pennant. Or you trade him this offseason and you bring back a mother load. Or you unload a bad contract as the Yu Darvish tax. They're going to be faced with a lot of options. I suspect they'll keep him, but I don't think they'll keep him beyond that. You're talking about a guy who, you know, will go out there and get north of $25 million, maybe $30 million per year in his 30s, and he's going to get 5, 6, 7, 8 years. I don't know. Even if Yu Darvish was dying to stay in Texas, I don't even know if that would be the right move for this club to do, to extend that many resources or that much money towards one guy. So I really think we're looking at a year and a half of Darvish. So to your point, Yeah, I think they're already looking at who they could have at the top of this rotation when he's gone, as well as who they could have with him to really go for it while they do have him.
I think that's always going to be priority one for this front office, Darvish here or Darvish gone, is to go find more young, controllable, top of the rotation guys. I agree with you. I think it's very unlikely he gets traded this winter. But you always listen. And as you were bringing up that topic, one trade that popped into mind for me that happened several years back was when Tampa Bay had Garza, who was just emerging as a, you know, a number two type starter. This is before he was with the Cubs, well before he was with Texas. They sent him to the Cubs for a package that included Chris Archer, who right now is a guy you'd love to have. That would be the type of trade that I think that Texas would be looking to have offered to them for them to even have a discussion internally. Do we move Darvish? They're certainly not going to shop him. Teams will come, you know, pick up the phone and say, hey, you know, you're a year away from probably losing this guy. Are you interested? Well, what do you have to offer? If there's a package that includes a young starter that our scouts believe, whether he's in the big leagues now or, you know, double A, triple A in a year away, they think this is a guy that's on his way to being a potential one or two if healthy. That would be the only type of package I could even imagine them listening to. And it would obviously have to include, you know, three other pieces that were legitimate, very similar to what was given up for Hamels. But at the center of that deal would have to be somebody that is ready to step in your rotation and develop into a top guy. Otherwise, Darvish is here this year. He's here next year because this team is built to win next year. They're not going to move Darvish in a year that they believe they can win, unless the return is just so overwhelming that it makes bad sense not to do it.
Okay, hypothetical, pretend land, since we're just spitballing. So let's say that the Dodgers are like, we want you, Darvish. We want that last year, you, Darvish. We're spending a ton of money. We're going for it. And beyond that, we want you, Darvish, to come spend a year here. We may even get a deal done with him by the All-Star break to stay here. We've got the money. We want to keep him. What about this 19-year-old kid that just came up? It's Urias?
Yeah, is
that,
Urias,
is,
yeah.
Now, so what's this guy's upside, and how is that something that both teams might be willing to consider?
Well, I don't pretend to know enough about the Dodgers, you know, inner workings to know if they would be inclined to do that. I would say that at least 25 teams would never consider trading Urias, but that may be the type of team, the way they play with Monopoly money, they just may decide, well, Darvish is better than he is, no question, let's make a deal. You know, if they're gonna talk Urias and then they'll throw in a couple, you know, one or two of those young bats, and that's the type of deal that Texas would have to strongly think about. Even if they don't think Urias is ready, he came up and made a start last week. Dodgers sent him right back down. Apparently, had a very good start in his next start in the minor leagues. He's 19. I mean, he's a kid, but most people think he's one of the top, probably two pitching prospects in baseball. That would be absolutely the kind of deal they would listen to. I'm not saying they would, you know, it's a slam dunk they'd make the trade, because I still believe that having Darvish for 2017 is very tough to turn away from when you got him very affordably. But yeah, if that kind of deal is offered, that's the type of deal that makes you think twice, lose a little sleep over what you're going to do.
You're saying it's a done deal. Both teams are discussing it now.
Exactly what I'm not saying.
Okay. So you are saying it's a done deal. All right. No, it's not a done deal, but that is fun to talk about. Okay. Another guy that's fun to talk about is Jerickson Profar. And speaking of trades, let's see, he's got one more option after this year. He's got 3 years of arbitration remaining. He's come up while Rougned Odor is serving his suspension and has been amazing and is showing that he belongs at this level. It's fun to watch. He's just a baseball player, as you've talked about before, and I've talked about on my show. His feel for the game is off the charts. I remember you telling me about this kid, you know, when he was a teenager, and getting me excited about who he was going to be eventually, and he looks to be that now. But there's not a spot for him. So when you watch Jerickson Profar, let me put it to you like this: tell me what you're seeing from Jerickson Profar right now. What are your eyeballs seeing?
That nothing overwhelms him, and he's a winning player. He's a guy that when you need someone to make a play, and sometimes when you don't even see the play that needs to be made, he makes it. He is a really smart base runner that's not an 80 runner. He's a really good defensive player that's not as flashy as Elvis Andrus. He's not the power hitter that about six other guys in the lineup are, but he'll put some juice into a ball and put it over a fence. Goes the other way. Switch hits. He's just a smart baseball player that does things every night to help you win that don't always show up in the box score, and yet this week that he's been up for Odor, everything is showing up in the box score. He's been lights out, and just like Jeff Banister said to Nomar Mazara, you know what? We not only think you're ready for the big leagues, why don't you just go ahead and hit number two? They put Profar at the top of this lineup, maybe out of necessity, because with Odor out and Chu hurt and DeShields in AAA, you don't really have a classic leadoff candidate. He's looked great there. He's working counts. He hasn't drawn a whole lot of walks, but that's okay. He's making pitchers work a little bit, and he's gotten on base. He's gotten base hits every single time he's let off this year and previously. I think he's up to, 11. It'll be 11 or 12 games by the time Odor's back. And the guy's gotten hits every time. He's just a winning piece, and the big question is, it's obvious right now, where do you put him? And that's not a denigration on his talent and skill. It's just you've got established guys at every position that he has been developed to be able to play.
Right. And if you wanted to have him be a Ben Zobrist, come in and bounce around, you know, play some second, play some short, play some third, give guys breaks, maybe even get a little outfield, maybe first base, that's not fair to him in his development. And it's certainly, to me, is a little bit scarier with regard to all those different arm angles as he's recovering. Maybe he's 100%. His arm isn't as powerful as it was before, obviously, is what we're hearing. But I don't know. Does that jeopardize him from an injury standpoint to have him be a guy that plays at all these different positions?
Yeah, I'm not qualified to answer that. I would guess that having him move into an outfield position in particular would be difficult right now because it is a different arm angle. And he really is still building up arm strength if you listen to the front office. I mean, that's one reason that they say that he played nothing but shortstop the first month in AAA. It wasn't because they didn't think he could handle other positions. Clearly he can. They wanted him to get as many reps at that position as possible in terms of building up arm strength on the various throws a shortstop needs to make. You brought up Zobrist. I think one difference there is Zobrist, for the first part of his career, really until now, played on teams, the Rays, the A's, even the Royals, where there were spots on the field you could move him around because there were, I don't want to say replacement-level players at other positions, but particularly in Oakland and Tampa Bay, you know, Zobrist could bounce around because there were guys in the lineup that probably needed a day or two off a week. Those were weaker lineups than what Texas has. It's not as easy to say that here. You know, are you really going to sit Odor and Andrus and Beltre one day each every week? You're not going to do it with Beltre. He's not going to let you.
Right.
The way Andrus is playing, I don't think it's right to sit him one day a week. Same with Odor hasn't really caught fire yet, but he's a player that you're not going to play six games out of seven. He's an everyday player that he's going to get a day or two off a month. And then, you know, do you talk about DH? And then that may be something that we want to talk a little bit about. You know, you've got a problem right now at first base and DH, and I can say that not because I'm, you know, we're recording a podcast that's going to be out there for 7 days. I'm talking about a 2 month problem. I'm not talking about this week. Fielder and Moreland haven't hit, and they're in two very different situations because Fielder is more established, but he's also locked in here a lot longer. You know, Moreland had a breakout season last year, but he's also a few months away from free agency. And you've got them at your first base and DH slots, which on most teams are at least considered spots where your highest slug percentage should be. They're just not getting the job done at least consistently. Could Profar see some DH at bats? He's not a classic DH, but it gets his bat into the lineup. And maybe that way, if you decide you are going to do that, maybe Beltre will move off the field once a week as long as he's DHing.
Right.
You know, you're not sitting him. You're keeping his bat in the lineup, but you're getting his legs off the field. Maybe you work a little bit of that. Odor may DH once a week. And I'm just...
So what are you talking about? You trade Mitch?
No, I'm just talking about, you know, just give Mitch or Fielder a day or two to sort of
So
recollect themselves.
Sure.
On the active roster. You're not DLing them or anything like that. But, you know, I'm not saying take them out of the lineup, but maybe they're not 7 day a week players right now as they sort of, you know, refine themselves.
Okay. So we've talked a lot about the big contracts on this club, and Elvis has, I think there's a team option in 2038. I mean, it's a long deal. I know you can't, if you decided, hey, let's go with Profar at short because he's going to make less money for these next 3 years in arbitration, you would assume. And maybe even you get him locked up long term. But regardless, he's going to be cheaper than Elvis and a shorter, short-term investment than Elvis. you can't trade Elvis during this year. You can't. But if you also don't have to trade Profar at the deadline. A lot of people are, oh, you got to trade Profar. You got to No, you don't. You don't have to trade him. Would you consider getting to the offseason and having Elvis play a great year that he's looking that he has had to date? If he continues to play that way, then he'll look like he's worth his contract. Would you get off that contract this offseason and have Profar be short moving forward?
And be open to it. It just depends on what's offered. There's going to be teams out there that won't want any part of Andrus because they can't afford it within their pay structure. There's other teams that their payroll's high, they're poised to win. They may say, hey, you know, we're open to Andrus, and they'll probably ask Texas to pay it down a little bit, and Texas may refuse because right now we've talked about this. I think Andrus is probably, you know, earning his money the way he's playing right now. The beautiful thing about Profar is if he is just up for a week and then goes back down, he's shown plenty. You know, the pro scouts that are watching him from other teams, there's no doubt that, you know, Profar, if anything, has raised his stock, solidified his stock. Maybe that's the right word. There's probably no more questions. You know, obviously he hasn't played shortstop well up, so there may be questions there for teams that are thinking of him as a shortstop. But Profar, they don't need to trade him in July, like you said. They don't need to trade him in the winter, but I really feel like they need to move one of the three middle infielders by the end of the winter, because you really can't go into 2017 with Profar as a AAA player. He does have an option, but in terms of where his game is, he needs to be in the big leagues. And whether that's as part of a trade or in Texas because you've traded somebody else, I think by the winter that something needs to happen to break up that trio.
All right, let's get off shortstop. Let's look at second base, and let's take all emotion out of it. Let's take the greatness of the punch out of this and how much we love Rugi. Just looking at those two players, Profar and Odor, in your opinion, which one of those guys is a better baseball player or a more valuable baseball player in the majors over the next 5 years?
They're so different. I'd go to war with both, either right. one of them.
But that says how good Profar is, because a lot of people have forgotten how good he is, but they are loving Rugnet, obviously, because he's Rugi and he's fantastic.
They're so different because Profar, he's versatile in terms of he'll make every play, he'll hit from both sides of the plate, he'll help you in every phase. Odor is more, I don't want to use the term all or nothing, but like there's certain phases of his game where he's just a badass, and there's others where he struggles. He struggles to get on base. He's a very young player, but it, you know, he does struggle to slow the game down in big moments. He'll swing, you know, out of his shoes for that 7-run home run in the seventh inning when that's not the play. And, you know, Profar seems to have a little bit more maturity to his game right now. But, you know, Odor has the ability to play really big, maybe in ways that Profar doesn't, with the power, with that edge. And I know you said take the punch out of it, but I am a believer that a team needs players with that kind of edge who want to put 24 guys on their back. And I think baseball teams need a few of those guys. I think you have two very quiet guys that are that way in Beltre and Colby Lewis. But you got to have that firebrand player. I think it'd be very difficult to lose the identity that Odor brings, which I'm not saying he's untouchable. But I think you do have to factor that in when you're trying to decide which of those pieces you really want to keep around and which ones you're willing to move.
Who brings back more in a trade of those three?
I think the three.
Yeah.
Between Odor and Profar, I would say right now Odor brings back more. Just because of, you know, the upside, the health, the age. There's not really questions about him other than is he going to get better at working, you know, working walks and the things like that, parts of his game. Profar, you got questions about the shoulder if you're another team. It's hard for me to say which one brings back more between, let's say, Odor and Andrus, okay, because two very different types of teams are going to be interested in those two guys.
Mm-hmm.
Well, every team will be interested in Odor. There's not a team out there that would say Odor doesn't really fit for us in terms of, you know, money, youth, whatever. Andrus is only going to fit for select teams. And I would say Odor probably has more value than Andrus if you were starting a team from scratch, just because of the salary structure, age, and so forth. But if, you know, let's say I were St. Louis and I felt like, you know, I'm going with a rookie at shortstop and I feel like I'm that piece away, you know, it makes more sense for them to ask for Elvis Andrus than Odor in terms of how their team is made up. And so they would probably that would Anders would be the guy that they would come after. And I'm just pulling their name out just because they, you know, they, their shortstop is injured and they're a perennial contender. You look at the Giants, they're fine at shortstop. If they were going to come after one or the other, they'd probably want Odor. You know, those are the two teams in the National League that you sort of look at every year. They're going to add a piece. But it, that's a hard question for me to answer. I would say Odor of the three probably has the most value.
But you, with regard to Profar, if you were to try to get him at bats at the major league level as a DH, would you rather have Profar up DHing or Gallo up DHing?
No, that's another good question. I like the idea of Gallo continuing to play defense. And whether that's up here because they've decided they need to do something different at first base, which I don't think they're close to doing, but if they did, Gallo would be the guy. If Beltre were to get hurt, and you know, like it or not, there's usually a couple weeks every year where that happens, Gallo's your third baseman. So I'd rather him play defense at AAA every day so that he's ready to play a corner up here than to be up here just DHing. If this team were one game over 500 and struggling to score runs and in third place, five games out where the season's not lost, but you need a spark, that's different. Let's get Gallo's bat up here. They're winning without him, and until they decide, you know, they've got to go in a different direction at first base and or DH, then having Gallo up here, I understood it for a few days before the Odor suspension. His bat on the bench was available. It was used only once. People have questioned that. That's different. But to bring him up just to be a permanent part of the bench or a, you know, part-time DH, I'm not sure I'd prefer that. I'd rather see him play defense and be ready to do that if needed.
Man, this is great. Thank you so much for your time. He's the great Jamie Newberg. I'm Ben Rogers. Thanks for listening. This is the Spitballin' Podcast, a Texas Rangers podcast. Please share it on social media and tell all your friends to look out for it. Until next time, happy baseball, everybody.